So, first of all, I apologize for running late, but I was on my treadmill. I'm just kidding you. But anyway, I thought I had to come up with a good excuse. I tell you something. There is so damn much construction going on in this campus. I just hate it. And every time I complain about it, they say, well, you're the one who's making all of it happen, you know. So I don't get much sympathy on that. But anyway, I apologize for all of that and running a few minutes late. Heather, thanks for your great leadership. Does a great job. In fact, our University Staff Advisory Council, we just celebrated the end of the year activities in which they've been engaging in their leadership, and they do a wonderful, wonderful job. We are very blessed to have, with our 48,000 faculty and staff, such great representatives who devote their time and energy. So thank you very much. I say that. Health, wellness, and you. I like that. And what we've decided to do in these forums is to concentrate on something that is of importance to all of us, but rather than just having a wide-ranging discussion, we talk about certain things at each of these forums. Today we're going to talk about health and wellness. And why is that important? First of all, it's important because it's important. Let me just say that again. It's important because it's important. I mean, our health is very important, and all of us know that that without our ability to be able to have healthy bodies, healthy minds, that we can't perform at the level we want to. And it's very important to the university. And why is it important to the university? Because we want to have all of you at a place in which you are able to be here, be happy, be engaged, and not worry about the kind of day-to-day tasks because of the fact that you're not able to do them due to some health problems. And so we all have a community commitment to this. And our commitment is to be the healthiest campus in the country, if not in the globe. And by the way, we're making strides in that regard, and we think it's enormously important. And then there's also the other equation, and it is pretty simple, and that is the fact: the healthier you are, the healthier the university is in terms of its financial structure. Let me just be clear about that. The more that we all work together, and the more that we support each other, and the more that we get on Dean Melnick's treadmills, and the more we do a variety of other things, the healthier we are. Then we keep our costs down because every one of us share in the cost of everyone else. It's just that fact. We have among the best benefits in the country, and we've been able to keep our health care costs at an extraordinarily fine level because of the fact that I think we've all worked at it. Also, the fact that we have a magnificent academic medical center with a college of nursing and a college of optometry, right, other things, and where we can serve ourselves. So we have those kinds of options and opportunities. I will tell you, I'll just tell you a very personal story. It's been enormously important to me. I've been a university president now half my life. And when I first became university president, I had a young daughter, 3 years old, and I didn't quite know what I was doing, and I just didn't take care of myself. I put on the freshman 15, if you know what I mean. And all of a sudden, I realized I was slowing down. I was not being as active and engaged as I should. And I really did put myself on a very serious exercise program, which I've done all these many years. 6 days a week, 4:30 in the morning, I'm on my treadmill. I'm doing my stretching. I do yoga. Not very good at it, but I do, you know. And the people in my office laugh when I'm in there doing downward dog and I'm screaming and yelling and every other thing. But what it has done for me is it's given me the ability to be able to continue to do what I have done for over 30 years. No doubt about it. Without that, I would not be. Able to continue to be part of this great university at the level I want to. We have two extraordinary leaders in that regard. Kathleen McCutcheon, you're going to get a chance to meet in just a second, who is our chief human resource officer. Kathleen's new to us. She is really developing a clear strategy about how we comprehensively deal with health, wellness, and benefits to really benefit all of us. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I'm going to introduce Dean Melnick. Bern Melnick comes to us from Arizona State. Bern is really one of the leading proponents of wellness in this country. We were very fortunate to attract her. One of the reasons we attracted her, not only to lead a great college, and she is brilliant at that, but also the fact that she really wanted to come to a place that was devoted to the notion of a healthy lifestyle and a healthy way of living. And she is the first chief wellness officer of any major American university in this country. So let's welcome Dean Melnick.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I am really thrilled to be here today. What President Guy didn't tell you is I am here in large part because of Gordon and his tremendous leadership, his vision, and his willingness to commit substantially to helping us create the healthiest university in the globe. I am also blessed to work with Larry Llewellyn, Vice President for Care Coordination and Health Promotion, Kathleen McCutcheon, and everyone across the university, because we are honestly working as a phenomenal team in creating the healthiest university on the globe. So I'm going to start by asking you all a question, and the question is, how many of you have tried to change the behavior of somebody you love with information? We all do, right? Squeeze the toothpaste differently, put the toilet seat down, get more active. I'm going to give you some startling facts today. But facts alone, the evidence, usually isn't enough to help people with behavior change. When people change behavior is usually when crisis happens or their emotions are raised. I am going to charge you today to making just one healthy lifestyle change this month. Just one, not 10, just one. Park farther away from where you're going. Take the steps instead of the elevator. Pick up a healthy food bar instead of a donut. Just make one change. What really rocked my world, and I'm just going to share this very quickly with you because it gets to the emotion side of things for why I'm so passionate about leading a healthy lifestyle. When I was 15, my mother dropped dead right in front of me. She sneezed and an aneurysm burst. And what's sad about that story is for a year before her death, she had a history of headaches. And my father kept saying, would you please go to the doctor, find out what's wrong. She finally went the week before she died, was diagnosed with hypertension, given a prescription for an antihypertensive medication, and never had the prescription filled. And if it wasn't for that, maybe she would still be alive. But the reason I'm telling you that is that event affected me negatively for many years of my life, many years. So if you don't do it for yourself, make one healthy lifestyle change, do it for the people you love. Do it for your children, your grandchildren, your husband, your wife, your significant other. Just make one healthy lifestyle change today. Well, we have formed an incredible team across this university, and we are really thinking big. Nothing successful can be accomplished without a big vision. And we have to have a tremendously big team vision to get us through the character builders that are sure to come our way. Because there's no doubt about it, the dream of creating the healthiest university is very, very big. But I wouldn't be here today unless I truly believe that we as a team can do it together. Well, the evidence shows us. Faculty, staff, our students are incredibly stressed. I see it on a daily basis. So in addition to physical health, we constantly have to be thinking about improving the mental health of our faculty, staff, and students. One out of four of us have a mental health problem. One out of four. And that includes children adolescents, and college youth. Out of 1 out of 4 people who have a mental health problem like depression, less than 25% get any treatment whatsoever at all. Now, if most Americans were asked today, what's the number one cause of death in America? People would say cardiovascular disease. And technically, that is true. But if you look at all the causes of mortality in the United States, it's behaviors that are truly the number one killer of Americans due to smoking, overeating, lack of physical activity, alcohol and drug use, and non-adherence to medications. It's a sad fact to pick up the newspaper. Last week, USA Today had a big article on what the new prediction is for obesity in this country by 2030. The latest figure is that 42% of Americans will be obese in 2030. We don't have time to sit around and postulate for the next 3 years about what we're going to do here at this university and in our great city of Columbus and in our state. We have to act now to not only work individually with people on behavior change, but work really hard at creating a culture here, an ecosystem where people find it fun to engage in healthy lifestyle behaviors. And then you look at chronic disease. 1 out of 2 of us have some type of chronic illness. 1 out of 4 have multiple chronic illnesses, and those chronic conditions comprise about 75% of what we are spending on healthcare every year. Well, I wanted to show you the latest statistics on the health of faculty and staff here at Ohio State. You can see that nearly 60% of our employees are overweight or obese. 25% have cholesterol levels more than 200, and a startling 47% of our employees are at high risk for emotional disorders. So it's not just happening all around us outside of our university. These health statistics are occurring here as well, which is why we are so committed to really ramping up our efforts around health and wellness. Look at our students right now. More than half of them on the most recent college health survey reported higher than average or tremendous levels of stress. And there's a lot of research studies that show when students are stressed, depressed, or anxious, it has an impact on their academic performance, as well as whether they choose to stay in school or not. So we want to help them by, again, ramping up the wonderful efforts that are already going on to help them to cope better with common college stressors. While you look at cost trends for us in America, they are very alarming. We spend almost double in healthcare what other Western countries spend, yet we rank 37th in our health performance. Costs for families in higher education increased 5 to 11% last year, and a news article came out today said it is expected to increase 6% next year. That is not sustainable. We just can't sustain that constant rapid rise in healthcare costs. Now, what we also know is 3% of patients account for 50% of our healthcare costs. So we are targeting people, again, here at the university who are at risk to work with them. Health coaching, counseling, Your Plan for Health is doing a great job at that. But again, we need everybody's commitment to saying, what am I going to do today to make one healthy lifestyle change? Then you get into the whole area of healthcare that is not evidence-based. Of course, I like to think of it Ohio State at Wexner Medical Center. Everything we do is evidence-based. But we know the average clinician only engages in evidence-based healthcare. That's healthcare based on the best research studies, only about 15 to 20% of the time. So we have a long way to go before evidence-based healthcare. Everything that we are doing is based on the best research. Well, besides being able to lower our healthcare costs, why are we ramping up efforts in wellness at this university? Because studies have also shown us research supports the relationship between wellness and productivity. If our employees are healthy, they're going to be happier. They're going to be able to engage more in their work and be more productive. So wellness is the optimal state of living well, regardless of where you're at in your state of health right now. And we are looking at wellness very comprehensively. That does not include just physical health, but it includes intellectual, financial, occupational, environmental, and spiritual health. In the Harvard Business Review publication last year, there was a terrific landmark study that's being cited all across America. And that study showed that for every dollar we invest in workplace wellness, there is a return of $4 in reduced healthcare costs, higher engagement, improved productivity, and lower absenteeism. I can't possibly highlight all the phenomenal initiatives that we have going on here across the university, but I thought I would just highlight a few for you. We have recently, Larry Llewellyn, Kathleen McCutcheon, and I have recently formed a one university health and wellness council. And that council cuts across the entire university as well as the medical center. With that one university health and wellness council, along with our soon-to-be-launched health and wellness discovery theme, along with Your Plan for Health, we do believe we really can create a culture and environment here to create healthier employees here at Ohio State. So our vision, to be the healthiest university and community on the globe. Our council's mission is that we are facilitating the highest levels of wellness for faculty, staff, and students across the university and community. We will be monitoring our progress because we need to engage in rapid quality improvement. If something isn't working and we see that it isn't based on the evidence, we need to then do something differently. So we are creating a culture and context of wellness. We want to ensure that all faculty, staff, and students have access to and are engaged in evidence-based wellness programs, provide education and skills building in health and wellness across the university, develop university frameworks that are encompassing of all wellness dimensions, conducting then also a formal recognition program for people who are doing a great job at engaging in health and wellness. So we're in the process now, our One University Health and Wellness Council, at formulating our strategic plan, and we've got to do things innovative. I have a button on today that says, that's the way we've always done it, with a slash through it. We do want to continue to do, based on evidence, what's working very well here. But on the other hand, too, we have got to think innovatively, out of the box, and we have to move with a sense of urgency. We have started a new onboarding program in health and wellness for all new OSU employees. And that pilot has been going on for about 3 months now. People are seeing, when they come on board to the university, a physician or a nurse practitioner who is able then to get their personalized health assessments. If they find high blood pressure right as they're coming into the university, we can do something about it immediately. So we also are going to be restarting, some of you are familiar with the Wellness Ambassador Program that was producing some very nice outcomes. We are going to be ramping that program up again because we need you, all of you, across your various units to be champions, to walk the talk. I think it's so frustrating for people to hear maybe leaders, hear faculty talk about what we have to do, but they're not walking the talk. And here I think you have a leadership team that is very invested in walking the talk. We have wellness walks every week, a lot of activities going on to keep us engaged. We are getting to launch our new Buckeye Wellness Packs, which will have 13 wonderful items in the Buckeye Wellness Pack, including a new Buckeye Healthy Snack that we hope will become as popular as our wonderful Buckeye candies. We put out now every month Buckeye wellness tips that are based on the best evidence that go into OSU Today. And this year we plan on launching Wellness Wednesdays at the university, where things will be going on in terms of helping you lead a healthy lifestyle across campus. Well, as one example, what I've done in the College of Nursing, I've really created a wellness culture there. We have walking treadmills with computers so people can actually walk and answer emails. We have walking meetings, standing meetings. We have chair massages, and we have fitness classes. And these are things that I'm hoping that will be instituted across more units at the university. You also may have seen a little bit of news about a new program that we have been starting here at the university in collaboration with Johnson & Johnson Corporation. They have nice evidence on this wellness energy management program to show that when people go through it, not only are they more physically active and healthy, but they're more engaged at work and more productive. So OSU, to conclude, has many wellness firsts. We were the first partner of the Million Hearts campaign. If you've seen any of the materials that we have been handing out on that, that's the government's initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes over the next 5 years. We also are the first university to receive accreditation as a healthy organization by U.S. Healthiest. So this is the last slide I'm going to show. And I have this painting. And the painting is literally this small, so it looks much bigger up here. When I was at Arizona State University, I oversaw 5 health centers there. And every year we would have an event. It was called Art for Health. Young artists would come all throughout Phoenix, display their paintings, sell them. Half of the profits went to the artists, half went to our health centers. This was a painting a few years ago, and I used to always be telling people, when we want to do something big, you got to eat one bite of that chocolate elephant at a time. But now I have a healthier version. But I walked around, I saw this painting, I took it off the wall, I looked at the price. It said $600. I said, man, that artist had a really big dream when she put that amount of money on that painting. But we now produce these posters and give them to people to be encouraging. So finally, skeptics say, oh, yeah, right, Bern, you're really going to build the healthiest university on the globe here. And I say, as a avid Buckeye now, pigs can fly, so just watch us. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathleen McCutcheon, and I just love going after Bern in presentations because she gets the crowd going, and she made my case for me, actually, right? Let me get to the slide. Today we're going to switch gears a little bit on my portion of the presentation and really talk about the opportunities we have here at OSU in terms of a healthy life. Bern gave you some stats that were national and then some stats that were also part of our OSU community stats. I'm going to talk about some of our member stats as well, so that's everyone who's covered by the health plan. So if you see a little bit different numbers that seem to describe the same thing, we're taking from a little bit different pool. They are not contradictory numbers. We're going to start with, in the next about 10 minutes, the following topics. Talk a little bit about the current state of our Ohio State healthcare and the members or the participants, and that's about 55,000 covered lives. So that's anyone in our health plan, including spouses, partners, and dependents. We're going to talk a little bit about our 2013 benefits. So this is really kind of a sneak preview and introduction. And I think we have some really exciting features to talk about that I'm very excited to introduce. Some of you may have heard those in some of our pre-sessions. We are introducing something that I think is most exciting and a great opportunity for us to really increase our wellness and really get in touch with where we are physically, which is our free PCP, and that is your primary care physician. So if you or a family member who is covered by our health plan goes to your PCP provider, that will be free. And we're really looking at testing that for this year and seeing how that goes. Our same great benefits, so all the other benefits that you enjoy really remain the same. We'll talk a little bit about those. And then we're going to talk about the PHA. So that is your health, your personal health plan, and what you can do to understand your health better and then take some action relative to your own health and increasing that health. A couple of demographics that I want to talk about first. Our population, so our covered population in terms of who they are and how this affects some of our rates and what we pay. We have an older average age in terms of the covered participants. We have a 40% obesity rate. And if you remember Bern's number, that was a little bit different. This is all of our members, so the rate for our members, which is obviously not necessarily a good statistic for us. Heart disease. 52% of our faculty and staff costs come from paying for heart disease. And then in our last bullet, we have a higher percentage of enrolled dependents than most other universities or academic institutions. All of these things affect our rates, it affects the coverage that we can offer, and it affects how we look at benefits. So I really wanted to give you some of the details that we look at when we're looking at planning, when we're looking at costing overall. Next slide is really about how we compare to the national average. And while we've done very well, our run rate from 2006 to 2010 in terms of overall cost was about 38% as compared to 52% national average. So that is really good. And I wasn't here to take credit for that, but certainly Larry Llewellyn, Nancy Campbell, Pam Dosick, who really ran the benefit operation at that time, were making smart decisions and about costs even at that point in time. So we want to continue that good work, but as you see from the box on the far right, our costs have increased. They've really spiked starting in 2010. And so what that means is that we will have more costs to cover, hence we have to look at how we cover that cost in premiums in terms of what employees pay and in terms of what the university pays. One of the things, or two of the things, I guess, that we're going to be talking about, which I think are really exciting, is how we can bring those rates down and what we've talked about from the standpoint of people being healthier, people taking more advantage of seeing a physician, starting a relationship with their physician, addressing their health early, addressing conditions early. You heard Bernd's story, which was a very moving story, but a great example in terms of why you should have a relationship with your physician, why you should see them not only when you're sick, and then, of course, not only for yourself, but for anyone else that is covered under our health plan. So in 2013, we are introducing waiving all out-of-pocket costs for individuals to see their primary care physician. So that is not only in terms of our preventative care, when you go in for your physical, that cost is also free, but this will be all PCP visits. Second thing is that when we're talking about PCP visits, we don't want to let people forget taking your PHA. So we really want to coordinate and work with our physicians in terms of understanding what your biometric numbers are and then turning that into an action plan. We want individuals to participate in care coordination. We want them to participate in that action plan. And we are actually introducing a new vendor, and that will be probably first quarter of next year, so that we have a more interactive process when you take the PHA. I know we've heard a good amount of feedback in terms of the vendor and the portal that we have now on the website. And what we're looking to do is really enhance that experience so that it is easier to do, it is more accommodating, and obviously we get more people to utilize that tool in terms of their own health care. In terms of our plan options, we are going to have the same five plan options that exist now with four levels of coverage, and those coverage levels are single coverage, employee, spouse, or partner, employee, child, and then employee and family. So those are the same levels of coverage that we have now. The preventative screenings, which are free, those are your physicals, will continue to be free. The premium credit for completing your PHA will still exist. We are asking that you complete that PHA by the end of September. And there really are a couple reasons for that. One of which is, I just mentioned the new vendor. And we will have to shut down that system for a period of time as we change over to that new vendor. So we're really trying to get everybody taking that PHA, starting off the new plan year, and then working with the new vendor coming next year. One note for new employees who will be coming into our system, will be coming into our organization, we will have a window of opportunity for them also to take the PHA. There may be a little bit of a delay in terms of the time frame while we're working on that in the September-October time frame or October-November time frame, but we will ultimately be able to accommodate new hires as well. And Bernd talked a little bit about the new hire orientation and how we're looking at accommodating health and wellness in that orientation, and therefore that will be important for us to continue. And also, once again, one of our familiar friends, the $125 or up to $125 that you can receive in terms of your health-related credits. You remember that's kind of the honor system. I'm walking, I'm running, I'm biking, I'm participating in this activity, and that's worth X amount of dollars if you continue that. So those are all the things that you're used to right now, and those are all the things that will continue for 2013. We talked a little bit about that September 30th time frame. But I just want people to be able to think about that and plan for that, because we've got a couple of months before that that kicks in. The second thing is cost increase. And this is probably, I think, the second most important thing for people to take away from this presentation today, is that there will be a slight cost increase for our health plan members. However, we have worked very diligently over the last several months, and as a matter of fact, since last October, November, when we put our last health plan into place, to really look at what we could do and be very creative. And I think one of the most interesting things to me, and I think the things I appreciate most about being at Ohio State, is that we have individuals here who are willing to look at health and wellness in a new and creative way, and we were hence able to look at our benefit offerings and pricing in a new and creative way as well. Therefore, the cost increase will, on average, be no more than 6%. In the national average is somewhere between 8 and 13%, so we're well below that. And when you look at that cost on a monthly basis, for single coverage, that would be an increase of $4 per month, and family coverage, about $13 per month. Disclaimer on this is that we are still working on these numbers with our actuaries, and to really get to those exact numbers, dollars and cents. We need the first 6 months of our claims history for this year. So those will not be finalized until later this summer. But when we come back in September and start talking to you, August and September actually, and start talking to you about benefits offerings, we will have the exact dollars and cents. But you can expect to find these rates still standing. I have noted there with the PHA, the PHA is not contingent, or taking the PHA is not contingent upon these prices, but we do want to emphasize the fact that we really want everybody to take the PHA and to be a more active participant. So I think those are the things that are probably most on your mind at this point in terms of what the offerings are. What we want to encourage you to do, obtain your biometric values. We are going to have opportunities when we're doing our health plan presentations throughout the summer and in the fall to actually have biometric screening assistance happening, and I think before and after this meeting as well. We have that opportunity. We will also have opportunities to learn more about the PHA and take the PHA. We have more than 40% of those members that are enrolled in our health plan, the actual faculty and staff, who have completed their PHA. And if you've completed your PHA as of October 1st, 2011, you don't have to repeat that. So we're really going back almost a year in terms of our health plan time frame to use those PHA results going forward. One thing that people ask all the time is confidentiality. So I give you my medical information, I complete this PHA, but who really sees that information? I think you should be very confident and rest assured that we are very diligent. We follow all HIPAA requirements and guidelines relative to our health plan members' information. There is no data that we see, and that is outside, obviously, your physicians who are dealing with you on a regular basis with your health. But from a human resources standpoint or a health plan standpoint, there is no data that we see that is individual data. It is very scrubbed. We really use that data to get some of the numbers that I mentioned earlier in the presentation. But in terms of confidentiality, we are very, very strict along those guidelines, as we are for all of our patients and our members. But I just wanted to point that out because that is an often asked question, and I don't want it to be a barrier for people to participate further, whether it's the biometric screening or for the PHA. So your plan for health, I think your plan for health has been around since 2006, 2007, continuing to increase in terms of the opportunities and tools that you have at your disposal. I would like you to take advantage of as many of them as possible. We'd like the university to be, as Bern mentioned, the healthiest university on the globe. That is our goal. It's a lofty goal, but certainly one that I think we have to start on an individual basis, member by member. The other thing, though, is I don't want everyone to forget that this is not only for faculty and staff. This is for all of your dependents, for your spouses, for your partners. So I would encourage you to have those individuals participate. We did get some feedback in terms of participation in PCP or taking a PHA or biometric screening, that our hours may not always be convenient. So we'll be looking at evenings and weekends as well to assist you and your family members to be able to take those important screenings and tests and to really understand your health and participate more fully in ultimately optimal health. I think I went too far. We've got some time now, about 10 minutes for questions, and so I'd like to invite President Gee and Byrne and Larry Llewellyn. We probably don't need to stand on the stage, but we'd be happy to answer questions. Gold star, first question.
The 2013 year, is that fiscal or calendar?
For benefits, it is calendar year. So it will not start until January of 2013, yes. But once again, never too late to start taking advantage of PHA biometrics. Good for you.
Questions? Folks have questions here? We have a microphone right here. Yes, Heather?
How do you plan on reaching the faculty and staff who don't complete the PHA? So that could be that they're not getting the right communications because, you know, there's faculty and staff at all levels of the institution. Mm-hmm. So 40% have completed it. Say September 1 comes and we realize there's only 75% that's completed. How are you going to target that other population and find out why they are not completing it?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, we are doing more planful marketing earlier. So we are out at this point in time, which is very early in terms of a plan year, to talk about our offerings and really to get people thinking about these type of things. We also are looking at, I think I mentioned, having our usual benefits presentations, but coupling those with biometric screening opportunities and opportunities to take the PHA. So for people who come to listen to those presentations, there will be opportunities before and after, and then, as I said, evenings and weekends as well, to participate in and learn more about those programs. And I think it's really communication. Last year we did 67 non-individual group sessions in the regional campuses and here on the Columbus campus in different locations. And we're really looking, I've got some of my benefits consultants here today. I know that they're looking forward to being out and about and doing that earlier in the year, so starting this summer. And really, I think it's more coverage, it's more marketing, more exposure.
Here we go. Yes. We've got a microphone coming right here.
Oh, thanks. I have a big mouth. I probably don't need it. But working with Byrne and Larry with our Wexner Medical Center Health and Wellness Initiative, Heather, thanks for your contributions. We'll be having a number of events, and the door is open in all those settings and for all those events for the plan to be participating in either having displays or opportunities for people to complete their profiles. We're also creating a web portal, a health and wellness web portal internally for our OneSource, and we're going to work closely with the plan to do our best to see that we help extend awareness of these opportunities. So our first event, shall I tell them, Larry?
Right ahead.
And Byrne is there, and I hope she's going to be there. And Dr. Gee, you're welcome to come over for this one. It's a soft rollout, as Larry would say. On June 29th in the Hart Hospital Auditorium, our first event is going to be Fitness for Health, Wellness, and Fun. And our major speaker is going to be Dr. Tom Ryan from the Heart and Cardiovascular Medicine Program. He's going to talk about fitness for a healthy heart. Larry's going to speak about biking briefly, and also Megan Amaya is going to talk about commitment to exercise and making it fun. So you'll all be getting announcements Monday or Tuesday. We have room for about 150. We have a very healthy menu planned. It'll be a light lunch or a snack, and please sign up, and I hope to see you all there.
Yeah, they're going to serve sliders and French fries.
Only for the president of the university.
Okay, great, right.
Not this year.
Questions? Okay, we've got a question right here.
Is this working? There we go.
You got your mic on. Great.
Awesome. This may be more for Dr. Melnick, but students have been mentioned a couple times throughout this presentation, but the vast majority of it's been about faculty and staff. I don't know if maybe you could flesh out some ideas you have for student engagement or, you know, whatever plans are coming in the future.
Absolutely. Well, for one, Javon Gaston Adams, Vice President for Student Life, is on our One University Health and Wellness Council. So we are planning broadly across faculty, staff, and students. A couple of things that are very exciting that are going to be added this year. Three colleges are going to be piloting a 7-session cognitive behavioral coping skills module in the freshman survey course that our freshmen take. And we will actually be collecting data on that to see if students who take that module actually report less stress and do better academically. And then we're launching a new course in addition to other courses already offered in health and wellness. It will be called 5 to Thrive, Cope Healthy Lifestyles. We did that particular course at Arizona State University, showed that it dropped depression, anxiety, as well as increased physical activity and retention rate of students coming back to the university. So we thought that would make you happy, Gordon, to launch that. So there is definitely a plan to add to the wonderful things that are already being done for students.
I think, but your point's very well taken. You know, if you think about our population, 48,000 faculty and staff, but 65,000 students, and the wellness concept should be firmly embedded with them as part of this. And I think that, you know, clearly we have a plan, but today obviously we're more focusing on staff and faculty. You know, the thing that worries me, I'll just say this, and I think we need to kind of always place this. You know, this is not an attempt on the university to be directive or paternalistic. I think that's very important. I think it's an attempt by all of us, on behalf of all of us, to really develop a way for us to be supportive of each other, realizing that the benefits are enormous. But you know, there are always going to be people who just don't want to participate. You know, the 25% will shut off their light, heat, water, and health benefits. No, that's how we'll get them to participate. But the point is the fact that we don't want to be paternalistic, but at the same time, if we're going to do this, we all have to have this kind of as a community project. It's like Pelotonia or any of the other kinds of things that we have, a community project. We're going to cure cancer, but we can only do it with us collectively working on these kinds of issues. So it's that fine line we're trying to draw, and encouragement is important in this effort by all of us encouraging each other, too, I think. Yes?
We have some wonderful health and physical education facilities here, but for some of us staff between home and work schedules, we find it hard to make use of them, and I'm just wondering if the council has thought about incentivizing the use of those facilities in some way, like for those that commit to use it, maybe providing some occasional release time, so you can actually go over on a lunch hour and make it work, or go over early in the morning, or I don't know, anything along those lines.
I can make a couple comments about this. Can everybody hear me okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's two things to think about. One is when the council's thinking about our ecosystem here, our total environment of health, we have to think about policies that give us more flexibility for when we eat, when we exercise, differently than we do today. So we have to think about that. The other thing I'm excited about is transforming your office environment. If you work in an office, where you sit, and don't just think about always going to a fitness center. I have a new item in my office, you know, following some of Bern's examples, of a bicycle that I sit on to when I'm working on my computer, talking on the phone. It only costs $250, and it's great. It's not some $2,000 piece of equipment. And so thinking both about our policies and how we access nutrition and exercise differently is going to be part of what we're doing, and thinking about how you transform the office itself, standing more, cycling in place, doing things you can do in your office. So I think that's great.
Yeah, if you go to the over and see Dr. Melnick's at the College of Nursing, which is really setting the standard for us. She has a lot of these exercise balls you sit on and do a variety of other things, and she has treadmills, and she has them lined up so that you can have your meetings with treadmills doing your walking. I mean, it may sound silly. It's not. There'll be a lot of people who will be grateful for that opportunity. So I think that those are the kinds of things. And Larry, I'm glad to hear you got a bicycle in your office. You know, it means that you're actually awake. So that's really helpful to us.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. He can sleep on a bicycle. It's how he broke his, or how he tore his Achilles, as a matter of fact. So. Okay.
Okay. I'll say out of my discretionary funds, actually, as a dean, I bought that equipment. And I will tell you, though, things like this, they're contagious. So other deans are catching on. They're coming over to look at what I've done at the university. And they're saying, I think I'm going to buy some of those. So again, I think we have to act enthusiastic about what we're doing. Even if you don't feel enthusiastic about healthy lifestyles today, I'm going to ask you to act enthusiastic, because then you'll feel enthusiastic, and that catches on. So I think there's various ways that we're working with the health plan and so on to provide this environment that can make it easy and fun for people.
Yeah, and if you come up with great ideas of what you want to do, we'll charge it to Dean Melnick's budget. But anyway, I think that's a very important point. Who was it who raised that question right here? You know, the thing about it is we can't say do it without us again as a community participating. And we will start figuring out ways to make certain that this is all part of our budget cycle and that we put these things there. But I don't want to come into your office then and have people having some of these things and seeing them being clothes hangers or something like that. You know what I mean? The point is the fact that if we're going to commit, then we have to commit to do it, not simply to buy it. I think that's important.
One of the things that we've found in HR that we're going to be taking advantage of in the future is, you know, companies that are selling this equipment are oftentimes really looking to get their foot in the door and to really enhance their exposure. So we're working with a company that we can get, you know, 25 standing desks and some other variations for really minimal cost, because they really want to get in and work with us. So there are a number of different opportunities in terms of funding.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is past 12:30. Thank you. Folks will linger around here if there are any further questions. But everyone have a great day. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful
night. Thank you.
Good job.